Hello and welcome to Linux Lads. This is episode 9 of season 7. Hope everyone's doing well. It's good to be back. As you may have noticed, I'm not Connor.
Though I am still here.
I came back after my little break from podcasting and with renewed vigor, we're going to get the show on the road. So first up, Mike and Amelith were doing some testing, some in-depth testing on Android battery usage. Do you guys want to fill us in about that?
Yeah, so we talked some time ago about using Lineage OS, and there are two schools of thoughts, kind of, right? Either if you use Lineage OS without Google apps, which you normally would install Lineage first, and then you install the Google apps like the Play Store and you know all that stuff, does it make your battery go faster without Google apps because every application is pulling for notifications on its own, or does it keep your battery longer because the Google applications constantly keep calling home and they are very heavy and very battery and they consume a lot of battery. So I tried testing it. I didn't really get conclusive results. So I obviously am a proud iPhone user. So I have this one spare Android OnePlus 7T. The biggest problem with testing on this now is, well, there's two, right? First, I just won't use it as my daily driver, especially if there's no Google apps on it, because that I can't use a phone that way. So I just installed Telegram element first from the Play Store, sorry, first without Google apps on Lineage OS from F-Droid, and just let it go as it normally would, checked every hour for about 8 hours, and did it once with the battery optimization for the two applications disabled and once with enabled. Got a weird result with the battery optimization. The battery actually got run down more to 95% after 8 hours, and 94% with battery optimization, 95% without battery optimization. And then I installed Google Apps, reinstalled Telegram and Element from Play Store, and got a better result, 96%. But as you can tell, this is after 8 hours. I have 96% battery left, which shows two big problems with this testing. One, the battery of the phone is too good, and two, more prominently, I didn't really use it as a daily driver. I checked it every hour, the difference between 95, 94, 96 is not as big. So I don't think the tests were conclusive, but it doesn't. If I was expecting that one of those things would just run the battery right down, that didn't happen.
From my hearing of those statistics, I would say that's probably, I'm no statistician, so I can't really say this with any authority, but that sounds like within the margin of error to me. Effectively, they're in around the same for that. It might be... Yeah, definitely using it as a daily driver would probably differentiate them more, because let's say it would vary by usage. If you used Element more, or if you used WhatsApp more, or if you used something like that more, would the Play Store version of WhatsApp be more optimized versus, I don't know, getting it from the Aurora store where it's not using G services? Would micro G be a factor? I mean, there's just so much.
One second, right? So actually, using it as a driver, in this very specific case, we were only talking about the notifications, right? So
it could vary from application to application too.
And the notifications are actually independent of the usage, because if I understand it correctly, and Amolif might actually go. So if I understand this correctly, the applications pull for notification with or without you actually picking and using the phone, or unless there's some sleep going on, right? So that's why I used it every hour on the hour. So if I understand this correctly, do you use it as a daily driver where you would do other things and that might vary, it would be very difficult to control for, would be actually less conclusive as a test. So maybe to test the notifications, the only thing should be that the test should be longer. Like instead of running it down for, instead of using it for 8 hours, maybe I should have just let the phone run down and measure the time. Because that might be better. You know, I'm kind of, I didn't think this through because I was really busy and I thought, well, I'll just do this. But it kind of looks like the correct approach is just because it's such a small difference, because the phone has a very good battery, and because the rundown of the battery wasn't strong, or because of, you know, it didn't take enough. As you said, it's probably within statistical margin of error. So we might try it again, not sure.
It's the interest of transparency, since I have the information here, and if any of the listeners would like to provide feedback on this, provide a better way of testing or anything in relation to that, I decided I might as well provide additional information just in case there are people out there who do want to analyze our methods and make suggestions. I'm running Lineage OS 19. I believe, Mike, yours was 18. I'm not saying it's making a difference, but just in the interest of providing, putting our cards on the table and being forthright in the information. I charged my phone 3 hours ago and it's currently at 92%, and I do have GApps, but this is my daily driver, so it does have your WhatsApps, your whatever. Like, there's effectively a dozen plus applications on this phone because I'm banking application, so on and so forth. I'm using it as my daily phone, so my usage is likely to be more severe.
Let me give some background on why we decided to test things. We got some feedback on episode 6 about Android battery use in general, and I wanted to clear up some misconceptions, maybe. So, say you've got two phones, one runs stock Android with all the Google services and everything, and you've got another phone with no Google services, no Micro G, no Open Gaps. We're going to say both phones, this is all theoretical, we haven't done actual testing with this exact scenario, but say both phones use Telegram, Element, Signal, and Slack, for example. But you can replace Slack with WhatsApp. Behavior should be the same. So on stock Android, Slack, Element, Telegram, and Signal will all run exactly as expected and receive push notifications through Firebase Cloud Messaging. Now, Firebase Cloud Messaging is different from Google Cloud Messaging. GCM was deprecated in 2018, and Google is trying to push developers to Firebase Cloud Messaging. It's a different system, but for our purposes, they mostly work the same. You have your Google services keeps a persistent network connection open to Firebase. And whenever an application sends you a notification, it comes through that one single connection to Firebase. On Android without Google services, again, this is no Micro G, no Open Gaps, no Mind the Gaps, none of those. Slack won't send push notifications at all, neither will WhatsApp. You will have to open the app if you want to see what's going on. Telegram, Element, and Signal will usually prompt you to unrestrict their battery usage. I think, Mike, you had different behavior. They didn't ask for that.
I have noticed that myself, that now I can't think of specific examples, but yeah, precisely what you mentioned, some applications have noticed a prompting saying, please go into your settings and change this to unoptimized for that. I can't remember of specific examples off the top of my head. Even though it no longer is supported by the dev team, I believe YouTube Advanced does do that. So if you're installing YouTube Advanced, I believe you can still get the APK from various different sources. If you install it fresh, I believe it does say, please go into your settings and select unoptimized for this.
They didn't. They got optimized, but they keep that persistent notification, basically. And Telegram explains it, say, click here, and there's a website basically saying, if you don't have any Google services, in order for you us to get notifications, the app has to be alive. It cannot be just like in the background. It doesn't exist, right? So there has to be notification. So you have in your notification area, you have like as many persistent notifications that you can't get rid of as you have apps that need to pull for notifications.
So those apps, in order to deliver notifications in real time, they will keep a notification up in your notification shade. They're usually like silent or something, but they will always be there and they will always be connected to their respective services. So Telegram will always be connected to the Telegram server. Element will always be connected to your Matrix server, and Signal will always be connected to the Signal server. Otherwise, you won't get notifications. So instead of one Firebase connection through Google services, you now have three different connections for three different apps to three different servers, all of them running in the background. So them running in the background with that persistent notification will prevent your phone from going into deep sleep. And deep sleep is a state where Android reduces its power usage, and in order to do that, it schedules maintenance windows. During those windows, you receive notifications through Firebase. Outside of those windows, all apps are put into hibernation. Network activity is disabled, usually. There are different levels of deep sleep that allow or disallow certain activity, and those maintenance windows are scheduled at different frequencies based on the level of deep sleep. But deep sleep basically puts your phone into a state of hibernation aside from those periodic maintenance windows. So all of that functionality is part of those battery optimizations you may have disabled, or it may just be prevented by keeping those apps running in the background through that persistent notification. So not only do you have three persistent network connections, your phone also can't go into deep sleep. So saying that stock Android has greater battery use than Google free Android is not entirely accurate, but neither is the reverse. It really depends on what apps you have installed, whether you allow them to run in the background, how often they check for notifications. There's a whole ton of different factors, and it really depends on your use case.
If you want a phone that will run free software, open source or free software only, like as if you want a phone and that where you would not install the Google apps, you probably would do yourself a much better favor if you just got a phone that runs Ubuntu Touch or something. Because if you are not going to install Google Play services and that all that stuff, there's no banking for you anyway. I wouldn't install an APK of a banking application that I found somewhere. That probably is not a very good idea, right?
It's all down to your comfort level. So yeah, there's your Ubuntu Touch or your Sailfish OS. You're completely and utterly not using a Google operating system or anything any way connected with Google. You're not using Android at all. Then there's AOSP, which is without Google services. You can use the F-Droid, you can use the Aurora Store, which I have used, and you can get your banking applications from there. And I've installed my banking applications from there, and they seem to run fine. Sometimes the there's some kind of safety pass system that sometimes some custom ROMs don't. For example, on my phone, even though pretty much everything works, Google Pay does not, because it says, oh, your phone might be rooted or altered in some way. I do not have, I did not flash, Magisk in order to get root access on this phone. So my phone is not air quotes, rooted, or doesn't have root access, but it says, or altered in some way. So Google Play does not work on my phone. Not that it bothers me that much. And there's also Micro G as well. Amelith, have you ever any experience with Micro G?
I have a little bit. My last phone used Micro G for a while, and then I just decided I didn't need it. So it does allow that connection to Firebase Cloud Messaging, so you will get real-time push notifications through a single network connection, if I remember correctly. Again, it's been a while. But it doesn't come with Google apps like the Play Store and stuff. Personally, if I want real-time push notifications and that Firebase functionality and such, Micro G is what I would go with.
So Micro G is just a stripped-down version without even Google Play Store. It's just the Google services, yeah?
They tout themselves as a free and open-source re-implementation of it. So they slot in. So if you install an application and the application is expecting Firebase or something like that, and it says, I can't do this because Google services is not installed on your phone, Micro G would be, it's a free and open source bridge between the two. So it allows you to still connect, get those applications to still connect to Firebase, as far as I'm aware, but it's not using Google services, it's using Micro G services. It's an open source replacement for it.
Shane, you've been quiet. Have you got any opinions on using
I was going to say, I have like zero horses in this race because I am a complete Luddite when it comes to flashing phones. I just have a OnePlus. I use the stock Oxygen OS that comes installed on it, and I'm happy with that. I don't really mess about with Lineage or reflashing my phone at all. I'm more of a desktop Linux kind of guy. I did at one point, like I did use Cyanogen Mod and stuff like that ages ago, but you know, I just find it's more hassle than it's worth. Sometimes
I used Cyanogen Mod. I used Firefox OS as well. I managed to break and unbreak a phone with that, and I used to flash even Lineage at some point, but then I stopped, and then my recent experiments reminded me why I stopped. It's just for me, I'm too lazy for this stuff.
You're getting too old for this shit.
Yeah, I'm getting too old for this shit. I'm 40 now, so.
I have a couple of antique OnePluses in the drawer that still work perfectly fine. I have a OnePlus One, the very first one, and I have a OnePlus Three. So the OnePlus Three has a big hole in the case from where I dropped it on concrete, but it still works just fine. Like nothing wrong with anything on it. Like
they used to make good phones.
They used to make like very solid phones. Yeah.
If you're in any way curious about Ubuntu Touch, the OnePlus One is one of their official supported devices, as in you plug in the phone into your computer via USB, make sure that USB debugging and all of that is enabled. You install a application directly off their website. It's either Snap or Flatpak. I can't remember what it is. And the application... It effectively says, oh, we've detected your phone. And it's simple, like, next. Okay, your phone is about to reboot now. And it does it all of those things. So it's an official... So if you're in any way curious about Ubuntu Touch, the OnePlus One, but I'm not sure about any of their other phones, but definitely the OnePlus One, because that's what I've done. I have a OnePlus One. It's sitting in the drawer. I wake it up occasionally and run the update and say, oh, I wonder what's the latest in Ubuntu Touch. And went, oh, that's cool. And then put it back in the drawer.
That does sound, that's just what you described. That sounds easier than installing Lineage. unfortunately, Ubuntu Touch for the OnePluses is only supported on the One, obviously. On the 5 and 5T, 6 and 6T, 3 and 3T to some level, and OnePlus 2 to some level. But I have the 7T, so I won't. Mine is not there. And for Sailfish, I can look as well. But yeah, for me, it would be like Connor, just curiosity, check what it looks like, and then go back to a normal phone for me, to my normal phone, my daily driver.
Next up, the Modos e-ink laptop has been announced. So this is as I said, it's an e-ink laptop, something I didn't really know I wanted until I saw it. And I immediately signed up for the mailing list to see when it's out because, yeah, looks pretty cool. I love e-ink. I love the idea of something like this. This is Amoleth that actually brought this to our attention. I just like the idea of an e-ink laptop because I like the idea of a device that you can't do as much stuff with. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, not as many distractions because God knows I love to be distracted. So, I don't know how much it's going to cost or anything, but I've always wanted an e-ink tablet that you can write on, you know, so we don't have to kill so many trees. And, they're just all like horrifically expensive, like $300-$400/euro. It's just kind of too much for me. It would have to come down a little bit in price. I would take less features and less fancy bells and whistles if it was just a little bit cheaper. Doesn't really have to do much other than write down my notes and save it to some sort of file that I can save somewhere on my computer. Doesn't even have to have OCR or any of that stuff. That's not needed for me. Just something I can doodle on so I don't have to use paper. That's pick up and go, you know. And I'm assuming, would the e-ink display on this laptop, Amoleth, be like, would you be able to interact with the screen itself, or would it just be through the keyboard and mouse?
I imagine it will only be interacting through the keyboard, because adding that the touch layer, it gets really, really expensive. That's what hikes the price up on so many of the tablets. And speaking of those, you could probably get a Books device used for around $200-$250 or something like that, if you're interested. But the laptop, they're wanting to create an e-ink laptop that is both open hardware and this open software, which is really cool. They want to build it in collaboration with the community. So they're accepting applications from engineers, designers, and developers to their community pilot program. And it looks really interesting.
Yeah, link will be in the show notes. It does look like a really interesting project.
So they seem to be, if you go through their website, they seem to have already some hardware. I'm not sure what, some of it is renders, but some of it looks like photographs of the motherboard. Not sure what, if that's some kind of a, it runs an Emlogic, so it's obviously an ARM chip, probably doesn't need as much power since it won't be doing as many things. But it looks like very early stages for this project. So hopefully they will be successful. But they seem to be queued in with the community. They have got a Matrix, Mastodon, they're obviously on GitHub, and they have RSS feed for news as well. So yeah, they seem to know what.
Some very interesting things. Just I don't know if those pictures will represent the actual final product, but they do seem like kind of concepts, and that's pretty much it. But I do notice there's no touchpad on it. Maybe that's just an oversight, and it's just a design, and you know they will have a touchpad. But I don't know how you'd really, how would a mouse pointer work with an e-ink display? That would have to be very high refresh rate e-ink display.
Or, and hear me out here, maybe it's Vim key bindings only.
I mean, I love the idea of just using like arrow keys and stuff to navigate. Like, I really like that idea.
Yeah, they could do Vim key bindings and they would have one sale. Mike.
No, I wouldn't buy it.
We don't need Vim key bindings. We just need up, down, left, right. Arrows.
WASD, right. Really doesn't matter. No, I think that because there is no touchpad, maybe it is touchscreen. Like, the e-ink, you know.
On an e-ink display, like a mouse pointer is going to not really look great, I would assume. So I would assume it's all like directional, like D-pad kind of navigation.
So from the rendering on their website of the like mock-up of the UI, they've got what you might see in some like minimal Android launchers. They have a list of applications and a text entry field up at the top. So it looks like when you start typing, you're going to filter the list of applications down to whatever you type. And maybe if you hit enter, you open that application and then you can use the arrow keys to select among the filtered results or something. So it looks like it's going to be completely a keyboard-driven workflow, and I'm totally down for that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really on board with that, like, absolutely. I just love the, like, they're really speaking my language here, because that's, like, as I was saying before, I love devices that are stripped down and simpler, you know? Just, if I just want to, like, write down something, or I want to just, like, check my email, I want to do something very basic and I don't want any distractions and stuff, and you know, it just seems like a perfect device for that.
Yeah, bring back the Windows 3.11 experience.
Oh yeah, like a total focus device, you know. I mean, let's hope it's not like a bajillion euro or whatever. I can imagine it will be a few hundred quid, but you know, I can't, you know, if they don't go too far with all the fancy features, and they just literally just an e-ink display and a keyboard and, you know, nothing fancy added on top, then it might not be that expensive. So that's it for this episode. Before we go, Amolith has another shout out for Southeast Linux Fest.
Yep. It's going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Sheraton Hotel. It's in 3 weeks, and I'm going to be there with my employer. We're, again, if all goes to plan, we're going to have a booth in the main hall if anyone wants to come by and say hello. Yeah, if you're in the area, you should come by. And attendance is free. That's a big thing. You can pay, and there are some perks, but attendance is free.
So if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can go to linuxlads.com/contact. We're mainly active on Telegram, Twitter, Mastodon, and Matrix. So you can get in touch there. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com. So do send us an email with any suggestions or feedback or anything you'd like us to read out on the show.
If you would like our logo on a fancy t-shirt or hat or something like that, we do have a merch store as well.
Yeah, that's linuxlads.com/store. See you in approximately 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.